Davey D hanging out with you, Hard Knock Radio, continuing our discussion about the privacy violations of the NSA, the spying that is taking place, not just with the government, but with the aid of corporations. Joining us on the line is somebody who's no stranger to this topic, formerly with the ACLU and the founder of the human rights, Racial Justice Center, right. Is King Downey. King, welcome to the show. And I had to have this conversation with you because you've been on the curb with this a very, very long time. I mean, it's, you know, when I was talking to you yesterday, I said you probably have a Cheshire smile because for a very long time, you were one to be very cautious about making sure information that you put out publicly was not so widespread and not so easily accessible.
Most definitely. First of all, I have to give you props. You've been swerving as these issues swerve and have always stayed true to them while also showing the role of hip-hop culture in identifying the problems and also solving them. And yes, my saying would be those who know their history are doomed to repeat it. Those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. And as I've seen the early years of the surveillance state dealing with issues of black power and civil rights, it was clear to me that it was just going to be applied wherever it could. And so now we've seen it. And here it is right in front of us.
What are you, you know, I guess a couple of questions, and they may seem obvious. What's the motivation? It would be one. And what do we start to really do?
Great questions. I would say to answer that, I'd make three main points. The first one is now the cat is out of the bag on the surveillance state of the Obama administration, and the thinking people always knew there was a cat in the bag, but now we know. The second thing is that we've seen a move from racial profiling, which you and I talked about a lot, to kind of whole world profiling, where everyone in the world is under suspicion. And that's illegal, and it's part of a long chain of these kinds of activities. And then to your last part, we're past the time for description. The time is now for prescription. And Stokely Carmichael said that 40 years ago, and it's true today, and we have to do something about it. So the motivation, there's two layers. There's the claim motivation, which is, you know, the bugaboo of terrorism. And yes, countries have to protect themselves from threats, but this is going way, way beyond that. They're collecting the telephone records of millions of phone customers, and we believe that, you know, Verizon, anyone who has Verizon now should be really hot, but we believe this was happening with all the companies. You know, operating special program PRISM that gained access to 9 major internet companies. Anybody connect to any of these? Google, Microsoft, Apple, Yahoo, and Facebook. Obama had ordered the NSA to start listing potential targets for cyber attacks. And right now when he's meeting with China, do you think that if China was even doing this, which they claim they weren't, which they could be, were they doing it in response to the U.S.? You know, is this an action that is causing reactions around the world? And then this data mining program, Operation Boundless Informant, that details and maps by country billions of pieces of U.S. and overseas computer and telephone network data. I mean, this is just overwhelming. And we would think that the purpose of this is to protect terrorism. But even Obama's own materials on the cyber attack is allowing this to move forward wherever U.S. interests are involved. And interest sounds a whole lot different than protecting the population and protecting the nation from attack. U.S. interests mean that, you know, we want to sell more jets than someone else, or we'd like to get access to oil. Does that also mean now that all of the surveillance can be used? That doesn't sound like protecting terrorism or national security.
You know, King Downey on the phone line with us. We've had long conversations, lengthy ones, about the privatization of police, the privatization of security, and what that would mean down the road. The privatization of this or private corporations being knee-deep in this data-collecting scenario brings to mind, you know, this very scary situation when you look at the role that corporations have been playing in the last 10, 15 years. One would say it's corporate tyranny, others like to use the word fascism. How do you see this in how do we put our head around that scenario?
Well, the easiest way to deal with this is to look at another whistleblower, and that was the whistleblower who was leaking all the information around Watergate. That person's name was Deep Throat, and it's still not clear who it is, even though someone has stepped forward and claimed it. But at that time, the motto that has driven me and everything I've done since now is follow the money. And if you really want to know where people stand or where corporations are or where governments are, all you have to do is look at where their money comes from. And so for me, this profitization, and you called it out when it came to the local police, and now we're seeing they're saying that the CIA and NSA, that, well, at least the CIA, haven't heard information on the NSA, but there's no reason to think it's not true, that half of their personnel are now under private contract. Private contract is not privatization, but it's profitization. And so if people are making contributions to the Obama administration and to Congress, large amounts of money, and that's resulting in contracts going to private corporations doing this work, well, the only way for the contracts to grow is for the surveillance to grow and for the data mining to grow. And so there's a strong incentive now to keep pushing these boundaries in order to keep these hungry companies from, to keep these hungry companies eating up more and more profits. The back end for us is, how many billions of dollars have been spent on these ridiculous programs, these four I named? Is that enough to build 50,000 schools or to give free education to everyone who wants to go to college? That's the other question that we should be asking. So when you talk about the privatization, you're right on the money.
You know, the other aspect to this, and you talked about this in the beginning, history will repeat itself if we're not careful. Under the well, there were two things. One, there was the McCarthy era, where people were being surveilled, accused, and then blacklisted, and their careers were destroyed. And that impacted many people who were in the entertainment and arts field and even media. Then later on, we had COINTELPRO, which we saw decimate the black community in terms of the civil rights movement, the black power movement. We saw it impact the Chicano and La Raza movements, as well as the student movements. And I bring this up because over the past couple of weeks, we've seen two culprits kind of circle the wagons and really follow a script that, to me, is inexcusable. We've seen media, instead of doing what they should do, which is investigate, ask the hard questions, and demand answers, we've seen them play the game of, you know, whether or not Edward Snowden is a patriot or not. So we're having lengthy discussions about somebody's patriotism for leaking this information versus whether or not it's appropriate for what he leaked to be occurring in the first place. The other thing is seeing large numbers of black pundits in particular also circle the wagon, some in the form of unity to protect Barack Obama from what they perceive as unfair attacks, and others are following the script as well, having these discussions about Snowden's patriotism versus the discussion about this type of surveillance. And so I wanted to get your take on this, you know, because now you have people who are by default are perceived as spokespersons for the entire community, and you have media, which we've been led to believe that we can trust, being asleep on the job.
you asked some loaded questions, man. You're right on it. I mean, the McCarthy era set the tone for the use of the outside bugaboo monster to scare everybody. At that time, it was communism, international communism. Now it's international terrorism. And I want to see proof that all of these movements around the country that are moving against their governments are all acting in sync with each other to try to bring about some kind of world domination. It sounds more like what the U.S. is trying to do than these people in these various countries who are being linked together. Although, no question about it, there are problems that rise when you bomb people with drones and indiscriminately take their oil. COINTELPRO was the next step that you mentioned, and there was not only the attack on the communities and the activists, but there were attacks on performers at that time. And there's an interesting piece that's funny. I was just researching as all this was going on, and I know because of your interest in the music industry, that the government has always used organized crime as a proxy, sort of what you would call the equivalent of death squads in South America, although they weren't going around hitting on people. But Professor, there's a book called The Politics of Heroin that looks at the way that organized crime was used to break the strikes on the docks of Marseille, who objected to the U.S. after World War II getting all the contracts to rebuild Europe. So what these folks were allowed to do was import drugs into the country. And so you see the early history for everything that happened with Dark Alliance and the drugs now proliferating into the community, and hip-hop taking up the mantle of all that. But at the same time, organized crime was allowed to take over the music industry back in those early days as a way for them to make profits. So it all kind of gels together. And as far as the media, the newspaper and the pundits, I mean, this media is the 1%. They're the same corporations that are doing all this stuff and profiting from it. And they're all interlocked. They sit on each other's boards. Each person makes money from other people. They hold stocks in each other's companies. And they're going to defend the bottom line, because anytime the U.S. says we're going to do all of this secret surveillance to protect U.S. interests, what they mean is corporate interests. So the corporations are buying this 100%. And it's going to take a few neo-grows to get in the bread line and begin to jump out and defend the corporations. And a convenient way to do that is what I call reactionary nationalism, where people are now going to defend people because of their race without looking at their politics or what they're doing. And before Obama was on the payroll, when he first took office, he was in favor of whistleblowers. He said they're often the best source of information about race, fraud, and abuse in government. And that's a quote. And now look at him. He's prosecuted more whistleblowers than all the past administrations combined. And whistleblowers have always been the only way that we move forward in whatever work we're doing, whether it was stuff that was going on inside the music industry or these bigger questions that we're looking at now.
Right, which, you know, in fact, as you said, the legacy of many of us being able to move into positions of influence or even have access was because there were whistleblowers to say, hey, look, you know, Jim Jones is discriminating. Here's the memo. You know, I remember the infamous memo that was leaked maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, where Tavis Smiley and the Tom Joyner Show was able to show that corporations had a special code to indicate when it was a black publication or outlet, so they wouldn't buy ads on it. Remember that? It was
Yeah.
And so it was because of that type of whistleblowing that things changed. And to see that folks would all of a sudden support any sort of attempt to clamp down on whistleblowers is outrageous. The other thing that you added, King Downey, which is interesting, was the whole thing about the government using not only the mafia, but its the music industry and culture itself as a way to further an agenda. And I think you're probably aware of the interview that the late Gil Noble did with Darthard Perry, who was an FBI informant, that talked very specifically about how the FBI had used culture and had made sure that they were up to date on the latest music, the latest trends, and then in particular black culture, and that would be used as a way to corral the people and damp it down. I bring that up because it was just a few years ago that we had the police, you know, collecting massive dossiers of rap artists, doing almost the same type of thing that's happening now, except when this was happening with the police, many of those artists looked at it as a badge of some sort of street cred. So maybe you could comment on that a little as well.
Yeah, that's a great connection that you made there. And the whole thing about this is that it's like squeezing a balloon, and you squeeze revelations about the other, because all of the tactics are serving every arm of this octopus. And I had conversations with the rappers. You know, you can check out the film Black and Blue on HBO, Legend of the Hip Hop Cop, where I went to Derek Parker and confronted him about the fact that that what he was doing was constitutionally illegal, that you can't target people on the basis of race or on the basis of what culture they have, and you can't stifle people's free speech. and free movement by surveilling on them. And it was all part of the same piece that in one of the interviews, Parker had mentioned, and I don't think it made it into the movie, and I have some of the outtakes, and I should do something with them. Parker was saying that he was trained by the original Black Desk and Red Squad that was doing surveillance on the civil rights.
Whoa! He said that for real?
He said it. It didn't end up in the film. I have the outtake, but I didn't use it. He said that the people
hold on one second. Let's, for people who don't know, let's give them a little history about the Black Desk and the Red Squad and why that's significant. And maybe what I'll do is I'll even play the piece so people can hear. It's about 10 minutes long. I'll play that piece from Gil Noble where they're talking specifically about culture and surveillance in the Black community. But if you can explain the Black Desk and what that was about.
Yeah, well, the Black Desk was created in New York City by the New York Police Department in collusion with the feds in order to monitor the activity of the civil rights and Black Power movement, Black nationalists. Most of the time, our history kind of ends with King and the March on Washington. But second gear of people stepped up who were saying that we're a Black community, we're a Black nation, we're being treated like colonies. And the Black Desk was set up to do surveillance on these people, even though what they were doing was constitutional. They had a right to petition and protest the government, and they had a right to speak out about the issues. And Parker said that the people who had set up that desk had made information available to him and had given him guidance on how to set this up. So for them to say that this was strictly a criminal investigation of hip-hop, which has had its share of crime, but it has had no larger share of crime than Wall Street, even though I'll say that while the percentage of individuals in hip-hop and Wall Street, maybe the percentage of criminals may be the same, and I doubt that that's true, definitely the impact of anything that any rappers might have done just shrivels up compared to the $13 trillion in illegally obtained proceeds that are sitting in offshore banks as a result of all of this derivative and mortgage crime wave. So he admitted that that was part of his training. And when you look at the dossier, which I have, at the top of each of the pages is not NYPD, but it goes to the highest level. The seal on each of the pages that was created for the rapper says Office of Drug Policy from the White House. So this came to the highest level, and I asked Parker about it. He says, oh, well, they let us use their computers. Come on, I'm not buying that. So, you know, so they just had a few little laptops sitting there that he could get access to. Where did that information go? It meant that everything that he was creating had to have gone to the highest levels of the government at the time to be accessible to them. And why did they need it? So you're right about that, too.
Well, let me ask you this. The reason why I bring this up is because if the role of art and culture was to blow a whistle, which is why there was so much surveillance, and folks, I will play that clip for you so you can hear it for yourself. So the poet, the artist, the writer, you know, these type of individuals were long known to be the ones to blow the whistle on conditions and get people revved up. If you take the most powerful art form, which is hip hop, and you start collecting mass dossiers the way that Derek Parker was, and now you're making this connection with orders from the White House or in conjunction with, you know, offices connected to that. By the time we move into this other type of surveillance, you have large bodies of people who would normally talk that are kind of like shrugging their shoulders like, oh, it's no big deal, or even looking at it as a badge of courage, you know, meaning like, you know, that plays into the whole gangster image. Like, I'm so powerful that the government is surveilling me because there has been silence from many of those popular artists in the wake of this.
The whole thing is deep about the way that we turn our oppression on ourselves and use almost anything to make excuses. And I remember it might have been Wycliffe in the film when the producers of the film asked him, so now that you see this is going on, and people were looking at the surveillance book and seeing their pictures in there, and you're right, there was a kind of swelling of pride, but he said, so what are you going to do about this? And he said, well, using lawyers, that's not what we do. And I had to laugh because, you know, I've done entertainment law and I've done contracts for people, and people are all up over those contracts. They want to know about their publishing. They want to know about their record royalties. They want to know about their endorsements. They want to know about everything, and it's all locked down and contracted. And I know that all the things they own, the houses they buy, all of those engage lawyers. But when it came to this, they didn't want to use lawyers. And I think there's a certain amount of fear within a certain part of the industry. But of course, as you know, even better than I do, there are a whole list of artists who are speaking the other way. So for example, on Sunday in New York City, Dead Prez is going to be performing out in one of the parks, and they've always stood up to this. And you've got folks out on the West Coast who've been the same way.
Where do we go from here in terms of, well, first of all, where do you think this is headed? You know, connecting these dots from the surveillance that is traditionally going on in our communities up to, what is now, as you said, a wide net where everybody's suspicious, and you wind up having to disprove your guilt as opposed to, being presumed innocent. Where do you see all this headed?
Well, I think it really depends on what people do. If nobody does anything, then this is just going to continue, and people are going to look up. And one day it's going to be the week before something that looks like Nazi Germany happens, and all of a sudden they're going to look up, and it's going to be the week after. There's not going to be any in between. And I know that sounds scary, but this incrementally is going that way, because under Section 215 of the Patriot Act, many things that were illegal have suddenly been made legal, which to me means that they're still illegal. And I want to go back because I know you're into hip-hop, and I don't know if you remember the Seeds of Wisdom. That was the hip-hop group of the Move Children in Philadelphia. And they had a great song that I used to play all the time when I was on the radio. It was called Just Because It's Legal, Don't Make It Right, and that was the hook. And so that's where this is going, to gradually legalize this stuff on one end, and on the other end, just make people accept this. Now you can say terrorism, and people will probably open their door up and let you go through everything they have in the house. All you have to do is say that buzzword. So we have to stay informed, and we have to learn about this history. Read the COINTELPRO papers by Ward Churchill. Read Dark Alliance by Gary Webb. Read The Politics of Heroin by Alfred McCoy. And just learn the way the state has operated on our community. And then we've got to teach others. We have to support the whistleblowers. Snowden, sign a petition on behalf of Snowden and sign a petition on behalf of Bradley Manning. Look at what happened to Ellsberg. And he was the one that moved the people who needed to see the cat out of the bag in order to take action. There were a whole lot of us who knew the cat was in the bag about Vietnam and wasn't buying anything, but there are a lot of people who have to see the cat come out. And so these people who bring the cat out bring all the rest of the 99% on board. So we have to learn that history. We've got to complain. If you're on Verizon now or any of those internet providers I mentioned, you need to write a letter to them. Do you want them to turn over to the government every person that you've called? And believe me, knowing who people called is just as important as knowing what people said, especially the way this government is. Finally, we got to just begin to remember that those old movements didn't end because they didn't work anymore. They've ended because people haven't stood up. And we've got to find small individual ways to resist this, or it'll be too late.
And we should also add, those movements ended in the sense because the tactics that are being used today were used on them. The surveillance and the manipulation of information, all that sort of stuff. I think what we're going to do is tomorrow we will play this interview that we did. I know you got a chance to hear it with Professor Christopher Simpson, where he meticulously goes through how the data is used, how it can give false positives, so to speak, how it will surveil you without human interaction, that it's really done by computer at light speed. And I think it will be eye-opening, because many people like to pump up their chest and go, well, if I'm not doing anything wrong, then I have nothing to be afraid of. And as this professor, who, and this is his area of expertise, points out, you have everything to be afraid of, because, first of all, you don't know you're being profiled. Second is that you don't know you're being targeted. And third, the way that these computer programs are being run and how they cross-reference, you can wind up being in a situation where you had no intention. And I bring this up because, you know, when we were doing work with you at the ACLU around government informants, that was the very, you know, is that war on drugs that got people caught up just by simple associations. I live in the same building as the drug dealer. And I said hello to him yesterday morning, and the next thing you know, I'm being jammed up by the police, and I'm being accused of somehow being in cahoots with him. And that sort of thing is what was happening in many of our hoods. But the way that this professor lays this out, this is going to be commonplace just for people in general.
Well, if the scientists told us that there are only 6 degrees of separation, it means that with these databases, anybody can link anybody to anything anytime they want to. And one of the tactics that the FBI used against the black movement was to go up to people who were known to them by monitoring phone calls or by seeing who they associated with, and putting all kinds of pressure on them to give up more information, and in some cases where those people had their own problems with the law, to get them to make up information to save their skins. And that's where this could be headed if everybody is crisscrossed and shown to be connected to each other in that way. And the last point for me is, if there's all that connection between all of us, think of the connections that there are between the 1%. They're only 1%. Think of the ways that they are all interlinked among each other, making money, investing in stocks, working for each other, leaving one agency, leaving the government and working for one of those companies, and leaving the company and working for them. Just think about how they're all connected together. And now they're defending themselves, and it's time for all of us to defend and protect ourselves.
That's real talk. And as we close, King Downey, we appreciate you coming on the show. I want to remind people, it was just a month, maybe a month and a half ago, that 9,000 police officers were dispatched in the city of Boston, unprecedented, as they shut down the city, shut down movement, and were literally going door to door looking for the bombers, the 19-year-old. And people accepted it, and they cheered. And then it was weeks later that we found out that the reason why those police didn't know about those bombers was that because even though they had received intelligence that should have warned them that these were potential threats, they ignored it because they were doing surveillance, wholesale surveillance on peace activists. And in fact, one of the peace activists that they had under surveillance was one who wound up saving lives the day of the bombing. And of course, these people were in no violation of the law and didn't even know they were being surveilled. And so we've gotten used to this sort of stuff. And that to me, like you said, is scary. We'll wake up one day and it will be a complete police state, and you'll actually have people cheering for it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, we're going to take a break. King, how do we get a hold of you?
You can reach me at kingnetic@yahoo.com. KingNetic@yahoo.com.
Well, there you have it. King Downey, thank you so much. We're going to take a break. We're going to let you hear this clip, and we will talk to you in a bit.
Thanks for all the work you've been doing.